Phone's on. Let us continue. We are on page 256, Esoteric Astrology Adventures, number 88, section 84, section C. We're in the Virgo chapter. We've just finished discussing the emergence of the Christ child in this particular solar system and wondering at what initiatory point it would be for our solar logos, as it is now for the logos of Sirius, that there is no evil within the sunshine of that greater sun. It seems that the solar logos of Sirius is a cosmic initiative of the third degree, mentally polarized, capable of focusing within its causal body just as a human being would be who had taken that initiation, and our solar logos is not yet there. But the initiation of our Earth and the development of Venus, I think, are important points for our solar logos to gain that type of development, his next step. Okay. Another sign of the zodiac which is also closely related to the previous solar system is Cancer. It might be said that Cancer is an expression in the stage of great advancement now of the energy of the first, of what it was in the first solar system. So now Cancer is an expression in a stage of great advancement of the first half of the life cycle of solar system one. But probably it was involved at that time with solar system one. That's what's being said here. But it has evolved. It is the lord of a constellation, and these great beings evolve just as does all else. Whilst Virgo is an equally advanced expression of the second half, the manner in which both of these lords of constellations expressed in the earlier solar system was, well, what was it? We don't know. But certainly primitive to the way it is expressing at this time. And Cancer is older, we see. Cancer is a sign somewhat, in a way, I think, less developed than Virgo. The lords of the constellations are not equally evolved. If we look into the sky, Cancer is very, very faint. Virgo, less faint. I wonder whether that faintness has to do with their age in association with our solar logos, or with the degree to which they are now effective, or now effective in relation to our present solar system. In an effort to grasp the situation, it should be remembered that the consciousness aspect, as we understand, the ability to be aware, was lacking entirely, except in such an embryonic manner that the whole process resembled the stage of the embryo in the womb prior to the quickening at the middle point of the gestation process, that which is associated with Isis, that which is associated with Virgo in relation to its quickening. We discussed that idea of Mars in relation to Virgo, that which is in relation to the animation chart, the Neptune phase of the ABC charts, the quickening, the beginning of the heartbeat. So consciousness, as we understand it, was nowhere near as developed in the previous solar system. It was embryonic. Although, interestingly, there were those who were individualized in that previous solar system, and even now they are with us. They were human beings, whatever they looked like, whatever form they took in that previous solar system, they were individualized, and are with us now, continuing their development here. The stage of the Lords of the Constellations must similarly have been much reduced compared to what they are at this time. Although it's difficult to see why these great lords should be somehow dependent upon what is the development of our relatively small solar logos when compared to them. Perhaps what we're talking about here is not so much the stage of their consciousness as the degree to which their consciousness could express within our solar system. It certainly expresses in relation to other solar systems and probably on their own level. So the tail does not wag the dog, and we in our tiny solar system are not conditioning the level of advancement of the Lord of the Constellation Cancer and the Lord of the Constellation Virgo. But what was their degree of expression within our solar system? That is the question. And apparently now it's much more advanced in the second major solar system, the fifth in a series. It will, however, do none of you any harm to exert the imaginative faculty and thus get a vague and faint idea of the synthesis of the great evolutionary scheme which, in a cosmic sense, concerns the threefold personality of deity. Who is deity in this case? Is it our solar logo? Certainly that's the one we concentrate on quite a bit. But also evolving will be our local cosmic logos, in whom our solar logos is a heart center. And I expect this to be the logos of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And also, who is deity? Well, who is the one about whom naught may be said, which I have called a super cosmic logos, or a not just a constellational logos, but a super constellational logos, a logos in whom the chakras are expressing as constellations. With this I attempted to deal in a treatise on cosmic fire. So this book was written afterwards, and really so much of what the Tibetan has written is an expansion of the various smaller sections that he inserted in a treatise on cosmic fire. The book on white magic is there in embryo, the book on esoteric psychology is there, the book on esoteric astrology is there. There are a number of embryonic books that were broken out and expanded in other books, but having found their first statement in a treatise on cosmic fire. This is the sixth sign, at least proceeding counterclockwise, and of it the six-pointed star is the ancient symbol. Well, since Virgo rules the monadic plane, then the six-pointed star is also a symbol of the monad. Portraying, as it does, the six-pointed star, the process of involution and also of evolution, the two triangles, interlaced triangles, one pointing downward, one pointing upward. Involution and evolution carried to the point of balance expressed for us in the relationship of Virgo to Libra. So Virgo is the six-pointed star, and Libra indicates the balance achieved. Perhaps it's associated with the central point, which is the point equidistant from all of the vertices of the star. The Virgo-Libra relationship will be consummated in their fusion into one sign, we are told, when again the zodiac is a zodiac first of 11, and then with Pisces, Aries, fusing a zodiac of 10 once again. So the processes of involution are there, and also of evolution, and the balance between these two tendencies is indicated. It's a perfectly balanced position. The triangle is the geometrical figure of balance. You have the two interlaced triangles. It's kind of creating, in an astrological sense, a grand sextile, which is said to be a harmonious expression between harmoniously related elements. But Libra is that seventh point, so we have not only the consideration of the point within the triangle, but the point within the six-pointed star as the seventh point. Six-pointed star. Six-pointed star. Well, it worked before. XPS, that's it. The planet with the point, not planet, but the point within the six-pointed star, point of balance. You will note if you consult the dictionary that astronomically Virgo was regarded as occupying the place, at this time at least, in the heavens where Libra, the sign Libra, is to be found. We are always ahead by one sign in terms of signs. If I deal with the constellation Virgo, it's now lined up with Libra. If I deal with the constellation Pisces, it's now lined up with the sign Aries. This is all part of the great illusion, which astrology finds hard to grasp. There are constantly moving relationships due to the gyration of the Earth on its axis, and perhaps, in some respect, possibly due to the circulation of the zodiacal wheel itself, though there are many simply physics problems involved in considering it a great circle which rotates. So there will be shortly two signs between the constellation and the sign which is aligned with it. The constellation Aquarius will be aligned with Aries. The constellation Virgo will be aligned with Scorpio. And so it will go. Two signs difference. Two signs forward. There is a constant moving and shifting in space, from whose point of view? The precession of the equinoxes is both a fact and an illusion, and that is an enigmatical statement. It is occurring, but it's an apparency. It all depends on how things look from our particular point of view on this Earth and the alignment of our particular vernal equinox with a particular constellation due to the gyration of the axis of the Earth. This is only from our particular perspective, and whatever is seen only from one perspective is at least partially illusory. Other planets are in other ages, and what is equivalent to their vernal equinox is aligned with other constellations other than the end of Pisces and the beginning of Aquarius, as is the case for us now. So there are certain movements which incline those who dwell at a certain point of view to see the surrounding universe from a certain perspective. Perspectives, however, are illusory. Also, let's just say that partial perspectives reveal an illusory sight. We can only say that this is true for us from our perspective. What is true from the perspective of another observer on another planet or in another solar system altogether is different from what is effective and true for us. So if we could see, as the all-seeing eye sees from all perspectives simultaneously, there would not be a great illusion in the sense that there is now. In another way, the whole universe is the great illusion when compared with the absolute reality of the eternal being, non-being, non-being, being, the absoluteness, which contains in an infinitized form all that has been or ever will be, completely. So there are many enigmas here, but the perfection of God and the imperfection of relativity, these have to be discussed and compared. So there is a constant moving and shifting in space, and let us say, causing changes in perspective. But we certainly don't have the whole truth, because we have only a very partial perspective. All perspectives seen simultaneously, as the all-seeing eye could see, reveals, I propose, the truth of the situation. The whole process, says Decay, and its interpretation is dependent upon the intellectual point of view of the race. And elsewhere we get the idea that illusion is the result of the interpretations of the limited mind, intelligence. So we are nowhere near the all-seeing eye. The intellect of the all-seeing eye is as complete as it can be in this particular universe. We're so far from that, so every one of our interpretations is a veil upon the truth. So interpretations of a by a veiled mind are in turn veiled and illusory. Somewhere DK said that we don't really escape from illusion until the ninth initiation, which divorces our consciousness from the cosmic physical plane altogether. And even then, if we entertain the idea that the entire universe is the great illusion, then whenever shall we escape from the great illusion? In a way, we are the great illusion. But when the universe cyclically disappears, then that illusion, an infinitely partial representation of infinite reality, that illusion disappears. So the whole process and its interpretation is dependent upon the intellectual point in evolution of the race. The responsiveness of man to the planetary forces and to the influence of the zodiacal signs is dependent upon man's vehicles of response and the mechanism of reception with which he enters into incarnation. So these are vast constellational gods, and what they are putting out and what we are receiving are incommensurate. We are receiving the tiniest fraction of what they are, but a greater being than we, for instance, a planetary logos or solar logos, is receiving much more of what they actually are and can respond to those factors which call forth no response from us whatsoever, because we simply don't detect them at all. The heavens, the constellations, you know, it's interesting, he's talking about this in a in relation to a constellation which offers a view of many galaxies coming to birth. There are huge clusters of galaxies in association with the constellation Virgo. I'm not speaking now of the sign Virgo. I'm talking about that asterism in space we call the constellation Virgo. Looking through it, with the proper instruments, we find a huge number of galaxies emerging, apparently, into incarnation. So the influence of the zodiacal signs, the responsiveness of man to planetary forces and to the zodiacal signs, is dependent upon the vehicle of response. And we have the most minuscule, tiny, and primitive vehicle of response when compared to the great lords, planetary, solar, and constellational. The heavens, the constellations, signs, and planets. Notice he differentiates here. He doesn't call constellations and signs the same thing, does he? Even though the sign provides a concentrated area of influence for the energy coming from these galaxies of stars, as he calls them, constellations. The heavens, the constellations, the planets, signs and planets mean one thing to the hierarchy, and another thing to the astronomers, and still another thing to the astrologers. We all have our filters, don't we? We all we view reality through diverse filters. Whilst they are simply bewildering galaxies, he uses that in a fairly approximate manner here in the middle 1930s, I think. So much has been developed in our understanding of what galaxies are since that time. Whilst they are simply bewildering galaxies of light to the average citizen. So by galaxies, you know, he almost simply means aggregations. Whilst they are simply bewildering galaxies of light to the average citizen. I feel the need to remind you of this and to point out to you that astronomical facts are only relative as regards the true and factual nature of that about which scientific pronouncement is made. So many scientific pronouncements are only incompletely and relatively true. Our science is simply in its infancy. With regard to the cosmos, DK tells us about coming revelations which can be as revolutionary in the astronomical field as the Copernican revolution was revolutionary to those who conceived the Earth and the Sun and the cosmos in a very primitive way. Yet it altered all things and made it possible for scientific pursuit of a legitimate kind to begin. But many were the barriers against accepting even the end to absolute geocentricity. So I feel the need to remind you of this and to point out to you that astronomical facts are only relative as regards the true and factual nature. Let us say, which hierarchy better knows, of that about which scientific pronouncement is made. They are declarative of life and potency, but not as science and the average man understand. I mean, who, if you tell the average individual or the scientist that these galaxies of stars are the vehicles of immensely intelligent beings known as the lords of the constellations, they will think you are very naive, very foolish, insane, in fact. From the standpoint of esoteric truth, they are simply embodied lives and the expression of the life, the quality, the purpose, and the intent of beings who have brought them into manifestation. This is the esoteric perspective. So I remember a discussion with a friend of mine who felt that the constellations were simply apparent relationships of stars due to our particular position. While I do think there is some truth that due to our position in space, the constellations appear to be variously shaped, this individual was surprised to hear DK referring to lords of the constellations, showing that there was some underlying intelligence relating all of the stars involved in a constellation, no matter how or in what shape they appeared to observers such as we are. It's an amazing thing to think of lords of a planet, lords of a solar system, lords of constellations, such as the lord of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, the lord of super constellations, aggregations of stars in which there are many constellations, each one of which stands for a chakra of that lord. So the ever more inclusive immensity goes on and on, and we are just lifting the veil slightly on this esoteric truth, which is most roundly rejected by those who have not studied this sort of thinking. Okay. As you well know, Virgo is one of the four arms of the mutable cross, the common cross. And as you also know, the four energies which constitute this cross, for the three crosses are crossed streams of energy. You know, it might be quite literal that that is the case. They are rather opposite each other in space, not exactly so necessarily, but relatively opposite, and their emanations may cross each other, as the emanation may move in a straight line, as well as the sphere, or part of the sphere will be straight movement, and run into or collide with that which is heading towards it and that which is perpendicular to it. The four energies which constitute this cross, for these crosses are crossed streams of energy. This is showing the value of the geometrical approach. This is the geometrical approach, which is so important in astrological interpretation. All the different angles have a different meaning and tendency. That these four energies are expressive of the whole goal of man in four definite stages. The four energies which constitute this cross are expressive of the whole goal of man in four definite stages. So let us see how he describes this entirety, this entire goal. Because he's not now talking about the cardinal cross, which holds out consummations that are very distant from present mankind, nor is he talking about the fixed cross, which hold out soul consummations. But and yet on this mutable cross, we do find Pisces as the consummating or final sign. This mutable cross is sometimes called the cross of rebirth. Well, you know, it's on the somehow between the fixed cross and the cardinal cross that the necessity for rebirth is no longer with us. This mutable cross is sometimes called the cross of rebirth, emphasizing the constant mutation of which it is the symbol, going into this life and out and into another and out constantly and repeated hundreds and even thousands of times. with the ray configuration changing and the astrological configuration changing, you kind of wonder whether some of the higher lives sustain their astrological condition and sustain their ray configuration and cease in their mutation and then stand as sources of a particularized type of energy over a long period of time, whereas all of this mutation is occurring rapidly on the cross of rebirth. Every life different, a different place, different astrology, different reality. So the cross of rebirth and the cross of changing lives, I suppose the idea of constant cyclic reincarnation is involved here. That's no longer the case after the fourth initiation experience. It pictorially represents the four critical points or movements in the span of existence of the soul in incarnation. Four critical points or movements in the span of existence of the soul in incarnation or soul in manifestation. And this soul in manifestation began with individualization and is still operative and will operate until we have the fourth initiation. So what are these four critical points? We have Gemini, and this stands for essential unrelated duality, the twins. Soul and personality are only beginning their relationship, though later they may exchange many communications. So, four critical points or movements in the span. It was under Gemini and Sagittarius and Leo that individualization did occur, and that the dualities of the solar angel and the animal man were related, at least in the method of individualization used in this solar system and on this chain. We have sensed and recognized duality through the mass fusion in Cancer. This is the shared mass consciousness, which is regimented in a way. Mass consciousness, thinking, feeling, response, action is regulated and not individual. And we have mass fusion in consciousness and the individual consciousness in Leo. This is the stage of humanity. These are all signs involved with, in a way, the beginning of man, the first incarnation being taken in a mass sense in the sign Cancer. So Gemini, Sagittarius, Leo, Cancer, these are all involved at the outset. So is this the beginning? What he says, the four critical points or movements in the span of existence of the soul in manifestation. Let us see as carefully as we can what these four critical points actually are. So we're creating a duality. It's not much related at first, and it is increasingly recognized as the individual consciousness grows and emerges out of the shared and somewhat traditional and much constrained mass consciousness. Then there is Virgo, the second sign on the mutable cross, and here we have the period of the hidden germ of spiritual life. It's veiled. The period of the active germ of spiritual life. Let's say it has been quickened. We have a gestation in the early stages, and the stage of quickened life, and the stage of probation or awakening. So this is the second of the great stages that we are talking about. Press the numbers lock incorrectly there. Okay. Okay. Number lock. Four critical points. The first one relates to individualization and bringing the dualities into connection and recognizing them somewhat. The second one has to do with the growth of spiritual life and the emergence of spiritual life. So the probationary disciple is awakening. So he's associating Virgo with probationary discipleship and with the awakening of the Christ principle. Consciousness is aware of it and is trying to bring it into expression, and this means many choices and conflicts as a result. Okay, the four critical stages on the mutable cross: the creation of humanity, the development of humanity until it's ready to be tested spiritually under Virgo. Then Sagittarius is here. This is the third arm of the mutable cross, and the sense of duality pronounced in Gemini is ended. And fusion is attained in the first and second initiations, the soul-infused personality growing here. Fusion between the pairs of opposites is attained, and it used to be that the man and the animal were the one. So let's say here it used to be that man and horse were one. Now soul and man are becoming one. So there is always this fusion factor in Sagittarius, the ending of duality, the creating of a unity, and the bringing together into one of two quite different beings. We're not talking here about how it used to be as the rider on the horse. We're talking about the man and horse fused. Later, the soul and personality will be fused, and Sagittarius is involved in inducing this process. The one-pointed direct and directed life, the stage of discipleship. So this is the third great stage in human development. We had creation of humanity, we had the testing of humanity, now we have the conscientious, mentally focused, one-pointed functioning of humanity, which has become the disciple. How to refer to this? Four critical points. Four critical points are movements in the span of existence of the soul in incarnation. There are many crises and some critical points. So let us be aware of these four, represented by the four arms of the mutable cross. And finally, we go into Pisces, which duality is linked in synthesis. Compare symbol for Gemini and Pisces. Well, you know, with Gemini, we have the pillars, but they're linked above and below. With Pisces, interestingly enough, the linking bar comes in the very center where the two arcs are closest to each other. It is a sign of final synthesis. Pisces takes from all the signs and gathers all the qualities and unifies them and sees them as part of one thing, one synthesis. So we move from discipleship toward what? the emergence of the world savior, the stage of initiation. So what are these four critical points which the mutable cross represents? They are humanity, the path of probation, the path of discipleship, and the path of initiation. That's what they are. So it is interesting to see these four critical points covering the entire span of human evolution described by the mutable cross, which is generally the cross describing the unenlightened consciousness. When we are upon the mutable cross per se, we have not yet the consciousness of the soul. But the way it's being used here, it extends all the way from the merest consciousness of being human to being virtually a world savior and a true initiate. So throughout this relation, he says, and as a result of the steady unfoldment of the soul principle, runs the theme of service. And this is a cross in which the three second-ray signs are found, and one of the six-ray signs. So it is a cross closely related to the Christ consciousness and thus to service. A cross closely related to the Christ consciousness. In Gemini, the relation between the great duality of soul and body, or personality, emerges, in which, at this stage, the body or form, that's the personality form nature, serves the soul. This is perhaps the stage of probation. In the very beginning, when Gemini is active in the individualization process, the body hardly knows, doesn't know, that there is a duality. Not until we get into the hall of learning and the second tier petals do the great pairs of opposites emerge in consciousness. So in Gemini, the relation between the great duality of soul and body emerges, in which at this stage the body or form serves the soul. In Virgo, matter or substance exchange or interchange their service, and each serves the other. So there is a more active approach of the soul to the body, which can recognize it. The service of the body to the soul in Gemini may be conscious or unconscious. But it sounds like the great pairs of opposites are coming into a cognizance in consciousness in Virgo. Matter or substance exchange or interchange their service, and each serves the other. The downward gazing soul is operative here. And this comes in once there is activity, real activity in the fifth petal. In Sagittarius, we find emerging the service of the one life. Even in Gemini on page 332, we see we move from the service of the self to the, let's see how this goes. I think it's worth looking at here. Right here, 332. We move from the service, I serve myself, to I serve my brother, to I serve the one, as we see here. Okay. So Sagittarius has a similar mantra here. In Sagittarius, we find the service of the one life in terms of the service of the hierarchy. We are approaching the hierarchy, the planetary expression of the idea of service. the heart centers. True service comes from the heart, and hierarchy is that planetary expression. It is the planetary heart center. It has to extend onto other globes and chains, of course, because the heart center of the planetary logos must be found throughout the scheme, and not only in some localization of it, found on our particular little planet, one small part of the planetary scheme. So there's the idea of serving each other. Now, sometimes, you know, what is said of Gemini and what is said of Virgo are interchanged. There is often an interchange, because in Gemini there is mutuality, although separation. The blending and fusing occurs more in Virgo, but there is a sense of the other and of an exchange of information or thought between. Perhaps the exchange is becoming greater here in Virgo, more intimate in some way, more fused. And there is a conscious attempt, I would say, to serve the soul. And the soul more consciously is looking away from its own preoccupations and concentrating more meticulously upon the development of its expression, the personality. In Sagittarius, duality is fused into oneness, at least in the perception. Grasping a great world view under Sagittarius, which is under Jupiter, bringing together the sense of the whole as one thing, overcoming the many dualities. This occurs in Sagittarius. We find emerging the service of the one life in terms of service of the hierarchy. So the disciple, who is now the one-pointed disciple, the disciple attempts to serve the one life, which is very similar to the advanced stage in Gemini, I serve the one. Duality can certainly be overcome by the relational faculty which Gemini represents. And whilst in Pisces, there appears, as a result of the entire evolutionary process, the dedicated, trained, tested world server or savior. Not only the world savior, the world server can also appear here, although the world savior is a further development of the world server. So we have service to the one life in terms of service to hierarchy, but this means also the service of the one humanity, because we cannot serve the hierarchy unless we serve that which the hierarchy serves, which is the one humanity. That's occurring in Sagittarius, and here saviorship comes in, a very synthetic expression, under Pisces. And all experiences gathered together, and a consummate server, savior, emerges, equipped with the synthesis of all that has been learned and experienced. The dedicated, so there's a sixth-ray word, trained, a seventh-ray word, tested, Scorpio and Capricorn operating here, world server or savior. It has been said that Virgo, I like this phrase especially, involves the service of the immediately present. It's practical in that sense. So often we look for that which is implied by that which is seen, at least I do. But there's also the immediate presentation in all of its humility, its humble state, and that immediate presentation, the conditions of things as they are, has to be served. So, serving the presented condition as it is. That is Virgoan. Immediate practicality, bringing aid, help, to that which presents in the lower worlds. Or in other words, that God immanent evokes reaction from the form side and is thereby served. the God within us expresses the form responds to this expression, and its response guarantees that God immanent, the energy of God immanent, will serve it. So the response of the form to God immanent guarantees a flow of serviceable energy towards the form. So here we've been discussing the mutable cross. We've been discussing four critical points: the birth of the human, the entry upon the probationary path, the entry upon the path of discipleship, and finally the stage of initiation. The upon the mutable cross, the theme of service coming out strongly through Jupiter and Mercury, and basically a Buddhic connection which works itself down into form through the advancing consciousness and through the preliminary initiations, well, even through the later ones. The different connections between the great dualities, their closer approximation, their movement from unawareness of each other, as may be the case in Gemini, to a deliberate exchange, to a fusion into oneness in the consciousness, and an orientation towards service as the hierarchy is oriented, and finally, an encompassing synthetic world saviorship, a very high form of service, as Pisces supervenes. I guess the Tibetan is giving us certain spiritual ideas, maybe only one, two, or three, with each one of the signs he discusses. He repeats them over and again until we really understand that they are the important descriptors of these signs and planets. We can then more easily relate the meanings of the signs and planets in a spiritual sense. We have to be on the path seeking the growth of the Christ consciousness, seeking the great expansions of consciousness which are possible to us in order for this new astrology to really make its impact upon us. So this is a major discrimination. Is the person on the reversed wheel or reversing the wheel, and can he respond to the esoteric rulers, and is the growth of consciousness, the second aspect, a key factor in his striving? Then the new astrology can be applied. It would be a mistake, as DK has sometimes said, to lay the esoteric rulers upon those who cannot respond to them, or to take these high meanings and try to apply them to an individual who has not unfolded even spiritual aspiration. This would be an illusion, wouldn't it? It would be the application of a particular type of idea to a context to which it does not pertain. If we look at the seven ways of illusion, we will find that one of those ways of illusion relates to applying something too high to a context in which it cannot be applied. Virgo involves the service of the immediate present, and God immanent is always serving the form. And when there is enough sensitivity through purification by Virgo of the form, then that form responds. There's an interaction then between God immanent and the form is served by association with God immanent. The form is served by, let's call it, conscious association with God immanent. We may somehow realize that God is immanent and the soul exists within us and so forth, but we may not have the actual experience of this immanence. And when we do, the whole quality of the form changes. Now, I kind of did it again, you know. I walked out of the room and left the audio going, I think for about 10 minutes or so. So I think, even though it says a bit after 3 hours, 3 hours and 10 minutes, I think, 9 minutes, I think I'm at the end, more or less, of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 84, Section C, page 258. It won't be precise. It'll be pretty close. I just need a marker. And we begin with Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 84, Section D, let's call it 259.